Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Clark from the Center for Weight Loss Success. And on this podcast of Doc Weight Loss, we're going to talk a little bit about emotional eating. We have a special guest here, Dr. Dawn Reese. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Again, this is Dr. Clark, and we're going to be talking about emotional eating. We have a special guest today, Dr. Dawn Reese. Say hello, Dawn.
Hello.
All right. Now, Dawn has worked with a lot of our patients for a long period of time. I don't know if that's showing our age or anything, Dawn, but we've been doing this for a while. Let's say that. And emotional eating, obviously, is a common problem for many, many people. And especially from surgical patients, but also just about anybody who's trying to lose weight. Tell us, before we dive into all this, kind of talk to us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in some of these things as well, and where you're coming from, so to speak.
Okay. Well, I am a clinical psychologist, and as such, I became very interested in health psychology or behavioral medicine, whatever it is they're calling it these days. And started looking at how people can start to live healthier lifestyles, how they can be healthier, not only psychologically but physically, and how the mind and the body actually connect. You can't treat one and not treat the other. You have to treat it holistically. And that's when you were talking about all the years, I was thinking, I think it's 11 years since you and I met and started talking about, 11 or 12, started talking about your desire to branch more into this type of surgery, bariatric surgery, and help people live healthier lifestyles. And that's kind of how I got interested in this end of the healthier lifestyle spectrum, is with you on that end. So been working a lot with weight loss patients, with bariatric surgery, not only the surgery patients, but also just people who want to lose weight, trying to figure out how to become healthier, how to live a healthier lifestyle. How to live, you know, try to extend your life a little bit, or at least the quality of your life. So that's where I've been doing that. That's how I've been doing that.
All right. So you've seen patients for many years, and kind of as a psychologist then, and kind of talking to people about lots of different things. Emotional eating is a common problem, isn't it? So we know it's a common problem. Most people kind of realize it's somewhat of a common problem, but if you want to throw out, kind of, what type of people really are at risk for this emotional eating?
Well, you know, I would probably say everybody is. But the people probably more at risk are people who are not taking care of themselves. People, and you know I preach about that all the time, people who are not being aware they're doing everything for everybody else. They're running around and making sure their kids are okay, their husband, their wife's okay, their job's okay, their boss is okay. And there's no time left for them. So instant gratification is either drugs, alcohol, or food. You know, and so a lot of people turn to food for that instant gratification. They don't have time, they don't plan for themselves, they don't take care of themselves. I would say those are the people most at risk.
Right, I would agree with that. You know, we see this very commonly with the people that are kind of truly taking care of everybody else first. You know, they put themselves last, they take care of everybody else first because somebody's got to do it, and they kind of feel like, and sometimes rightfully so, I feel like somebody has to help the rest of my family, I have to run around, be doing this, doing things for everybody else, but they then don't have the time to take care of themselves.
Correct.
I would totally agree with those are the people that are really a significant risk of that. Now, kind of shifting the question a little bit more here is kind of, is there kind of root causes for this? You know, emotional eating, very common, but are there some common root causes?
Well, I think, again, if you think about stress, and stress relating to, stress itself is really just any change, but in our society, when we talk about stress, we talk about, usually it's something bad. So it's finances, you know, this is pretty unstable economy system right now. People are losing jobs, they're very stressed about their job. So definitely financial stressors, safety stressors. You know, people are worried about ISIS, they're worried about Ebola, they're worried about, you know, is my kid gonna get hit, or abducted. There's just a lot of stress in today's society. So I would say financial stresses, worries about, other people, worries about things we don't have control over. That's a big one. Sleep deprivation. If you're not sleep, again, going back to if you're not taking care of yourself, you're just much more likely to fall victim to emotional eating.
Right. I think a common one we often see are two of relationships.
Yes.
People have relationships, they're kind of, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. Relationships, if they're going well, people tend to gain weight because they tend to eat, they're happy. If they're not going so well, we tend to eat because we're not real happy in the relationship. One person could be a food pusher. I hear it all the time as well. My husband can eat so much and I can't, but I seem to try to keep up with him. Or, my wife just cooks so well that I feel like I have to eat everything. Our society really does revolve around food, and especially relationships. When we go to be social, many times we talk about going out to eat. We don't talk about going for a walk with our friend. We talk about, hey, let's go, I'll meet for dinner or lunch or whatever. So a lot of our social interactions are around food, and relationships definitely can come into play when we're talking about emotional eating.
Right. And, take that a couple steps further, kind of, there are those, we'll refer to those connections between food, mood, and then just weight, right?
Absolutely. And without getting too technical, basically it is, we eat when we're happy, we eat when we're sad, we eat when we're upset, we eat when, anything, a celebration, anything mood-wise, a lot of us turn to food. And I always tell my patients, me included, I'm not one that strays away. If I get upset, my mother's one of those people that, I can't eat anything. Oh, that's not me. I'm a big eater if I'm emotionally upset. So, it's just, there's the mood, the food, there are certain foods that go in and actually do change our neurochemistry in the brain. We've certainly talked about that a lot in the past. And the research is showing more and more that the foods definitely, when they go in, they kind of change the neurochemistry. And we kind of get into a feel-good zone when we eat certain foods. We jokingly call it the carb coma. If we eat a lot of carbs, we tend to get this really nice feeling of feeling good. It doesn't last, so then we go back to the source to try to get some more. So there are those things that are going on too. Again, the mind-body connection definitely is there.
Right. Now, some of this emotional eating, we sometimes have to try to separate the emotional eating from true, physical hunger. Okay? Is that obviously we can get, as humans, we get hungry. Okay, and there are good reasons for us to get hungry. But a lot of times we don't eat because we're hungry. We eat for lots of other reasons. And figuring out, am I eating for what reasons can be kind of difficult.
Absolutely. We talk about trying to figure out, if you're just eating a big meal, it's kind of easy to say, okay, I've eaten a big meal. It's 45 minutes later. If I'm standing in front of the refrigerator looking to see what else is there, I'm probably not physically hungry. That's probably something didn't get met during that meal, or there's something psychological going on that you're looking for more food. But, anytime your stomach gurgles, and you can better address this, but anytime your stomach gurgles doesn't necessarily mean you're hungry, physically hungry. Some people think, oh my gosh, my stomach's talking to me, I better go eat. So we've got to try to figure out the difference between the two. And sometimes it's very difficult. So I think you could probably speak maybe to a little bit of the physical aspect too.
Right. I think, it is very common to kind of eat for lots of other cues, not necessarily hunger. Emotional, obviously, is one of those. But sometimes it's just, if something smelled good, I'm going to eat. If I'm in a certain situation, I want to eat, I either go to the movies or I'm watching a football game or whatever, that's just something I do. But trying to figure out that what's physical hunger and not. Now, you mentioned a little bit about kind of stomach growling. And really, what stomach growling and associating that with hunger actually is a learned response. we kind of learn it as we're growing up. The people, gee, you hear your someone's stomach growling and we say, oh, you're hungry. But if we actually pay attention to that, we typically make more stomach noises after we've eaten. And we're full. And what really the stomach noises typically mean are just that your intestines are working. Now, if it's truly been that, gee, it's been 12 hours or longer a day since I've eaten, then okay, some of those stomach noises really may mean you're hungry. But nowadays, it actually tends to be more of, gee, it just means your intestines are working. And it shouldn't necessarily be associated with, I need to eat something. But that's kind of a learned response that we most of us learned as we were growing up, that, gee, if our stomach growls, that means we're hungry. But it really doesn't necessarily mean that. Well, one exercise I like people to try to do sometime, and it's not necessarily easy, and you shouldn't do this all the time, but it's actually kind of test yourself, meaning that actually we'll go for a somewhat extended period of time to see what real hunger feels like. And because most of us don't really know, or we've forgotten, what true hunger feels like. Because if we've eaten in the last few hours, whether it be, you know, 4 to 6 hours, we're probably not that hungry. And if it's been now 16 hours since you've eaten something, 12, 16 hours, then that may actually be true hunger at some point. But a lot of times we've kind of forgotten what true hunger feels like because we haven't been hungry. And so sometimes just testing yourself is kind of seeing what does, you know, make yourself go through true hunger and find out, hey, this is what it really feels like, which is sometimes much different than what we think it's going to feel like. And it's just something that is not a bad idea to test yourself. Obviously, I don't want you going on 3 or 4 day, I'm not going to eat anything, work very well, but kind of testing yourself to figure out true hunger can actually have some benefits to you to really kind of just see what does it really feel like in my body. Because very likely if what you would describe would be different than what I would describe. And that doesn't mean they're truly different things, it's just that it's our perception of what actually is going on. So it's not a bad idea to test that once in a while and just see what that is.
I think that's really important because one of the questions I ask when I'm doing a bariatric evaluation if somebody's going to be considered for surgery is, how's your appetite? And people usually laugh and say, well, look at me, can't you tell? And I'm like, no, I can't, because do you get hungry is the question. And a lot of people laugh and say, I don't allow myself to get hungry. So I think that's a very good exercise to let yourself get hungry and just see what the signs are, what it feels like. Because I think you're right, in this country, many people don't allow themselves to feel hunger.
Right. All right. So now, emotional eating, eating when we don't need to eat, whatever one wants to call this, there are some steps that we can do to try to kind of just, I'll call it break the cycle, okay, of do this. And kind of what are some things you can help us with that if people can try, as our listeners can try out there, as kind of things they can do to break this cycle, so to speak?
Sure, you want to identify your triggers. You want to know what sets you off, what makes you upset, what makes you anxious, what makes you sad, what makes you depressed, whatever. Identify those triggers so that you can identify them and stop yourself before you rush to the refrigerator or the cupboard or whatever. We also need, in identifying those triggers, we need to have you find other things to do other than eat to kind of reduce your anxiety or reduce your upsetness or whatever. So we want you to try to figure out what's going on with you. So all of that's we're asking you to kind of stop. I was trying to remember, for alcoholics, there's I think it's called HALT, and there are 4 things you look at before you think about drinking, and I can't remember it right now, and I apologize for bringing it up, but it's something like hunger, but I can't remember, but that's the same kind of premise we're going to use here, is that we want you to be aware of what you're doing, we want you to be mindful. So we want you to stop before you go get that food to try to figure out am I having a trigger? Is something going on? Is there something else I can do besides eat to calm myself or to soothe myself? And then if it truly is physical hunger, then of course, you know, go ahead and eat. But trying to just stop for a minute instead of just going to that automatic response, that's really the most important thing, is to just stop. Stop and think for a minute.
Yeah, I think just recognizing, first kind of recognizing, hey, this is what's happening, and now what can I do to break that cycle? It's kind of just, I agree with you, kind of just stopping and trying to do, whether it be distract yourself, because distracting yourself can actually work. It was like, gee, do I really need this? Can I just get up and walk away for a few minutes? Can I, you know, do something different? You know, even deep breathing, sitting there meditating, you know, having your own little mantra that you may say.
Absolutely.
A lot of little things that you could do to try to just kind of pause and see, does this then fade, okay, if it's a true craving versus hunger or not.
Absolutely. And I think that the more healthier you try to live your life with exercise and eating the right foods, getting rid of some of those cravings because you're not putting sugar in your mouth every day, you're drinking your water. A lot of people will tell me, I don't want to, you know, negate all my workout by having this piece of cake. So if you're living a healthier lifestyle, it might be easier to stop and say, wait a minute, I just did 20 minutes on the treadmill and that's not going to account for the cake, you know. So if you try to live a healthier lifestyle, I think that really helps too.
Right. And kind of add those things. It's sometimes these little things that actually start adding up to big things for us, that when we start making these little changes, they add up over time.
Absolutely.
All right, so kind of, I'm going to say to wind this down is kind of the, as far as if you have kind of a couple, you know, tidbits that you can give out to our listeners out there, is what are the most important pieces of information you can come up with as far as that, just throw it out there.
Well, people always get tired of me saying this, but you've got to take care of yourself first. You've got to take care of yourself first. You want to be able to stop. Try to identify a trigger and try to identify if you're truly physically or emotionally hungry. Figure out other things to do. Get those into place. Exercise. Go talk to a friend. Meditate, like you said. Have a mantra. Walk away for a minute. You know, try to just do something different. You know, you want to be able, though, the bottom line is you've got to take care of yourself first. I keep coming back to that, and I know people get tired of it, but that's the truth, because if you're taking care of yourself, then you're not going to do some of the other things.
And it truly is just kind of working on this process of kind of living a healthier lifestyle. A lot of times, and I say this about weight loss all the time, but really it's about overall health, is that health, weight, whatever, this is a process, not a project. Projects have endpoints to them. There's no endpoint here. This is something we work on continuously. Sometimes we do better than at other times. When we're not doing so well, we just need to try to eventually recognize it and say, okay, what can I do different? What can I do better? And you get back on the wagon and just keep working on it, because it never goes away. People think that sometimes, oh, it'll go away once I get to a certain point. Well, it doesn't. This is something we work on forever and ever.
Absolutely. It's a journey. You need to be compassionate towards yourself, and every day you get a do-over. So every day is a new day. So absolutely.
Absolutely. We get to start over new every single day.
That's right.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much for joining me on this podcast. For our listeners out there, if you want more information, I'd encourage you either go to our corporate website, which is cfwls.com, or if you want more information and access to me, every single week I do a live webinar. Find out more about that. It's losingweightusa.com, and that's the URL, losingweightusa.com. Get more information. You can join me each week on a live webinar and interact as well as you'll get free kind of the tips handout that we send out, as well as recipes every single week too. So again, more information out there. Join us for those things. And remember, everyone, it's your life. Make it a healthy one. Have a good day. Take care.